man's not a human.
Well, it's a new challenge for Billy Shears, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it was amazing he could do Paul McCartney, but maybe he's up for a new challenge of doing
that topic. We're not doing that topic.
Oh, we're not doing that. What are we talking about? Men and women.
No, we're talking about ionization, and you're trying to put it back into the topic before ionization, Paul McCartney. So you're trying to bring the two together, and it's not going to happen.
All right.
We're not going to talk about Paul McCartney. I had enough of that. 40 years ago. 40 years ago. I was fed up. So, we're talking about ion. And what happens when an ionaut goes and learns how to be a teacher in Germany? Has to go through the conditioning.
Who are we talking about in particular?
Roxy.
Roxy? Oh, is Roxy a teacher as well?
She's learning to be one, and she's going bureaucracy.
She's going to teacher's college in Berlin?
Well, yes, we have to do this training in order to create the new education.
The new programming, the new world.
For the unenvironment.
The unenvironment, that's right.
I have to be ascended. That.
So she's infiltrating.
The program.
Well, are you going to, Roxy, are you going to be, are you planning to be a teacher of any particular type of topic or just a general teacher or art teacher or something like that?
Well, I would like to teach music to little children. Like, that's the point where children are like geniuses and they're connected to the non-physical and they're happy and loving. And
yeah, Roxy wants to hang out with her peer group.
Yes, and actually all experiences in that period are very important for the rest of the life. You know, it marks the personality of adults.
Do you think... Do you think you'll have to really have an
effect on humanity?
Do you think that you'll have to curtail your experiences?
Okay, you're both talking at the same time. Come on, let's figure out what one's saying.
Do you think, Roxy? Do you think that you'll have to curtail your radio experiences once if you become a teacher? That somehow someone will find out you're doing this and it'll be seen to be construed as being a bad influence on children?
No.
Okay.
Everything I do it openly. I mean, I'm a composer, I'm an artist. And like Frank Zappa said, this is all part of my artwork. So.
Oh, okay, good.
No, actually...
I'm glad they're so permissive there.
I mean, they're doing things not like a cult or a weird.
We're not a cult.
New age stuff. It's like Caroline is talking about nutrition, how to be healthy, and Bob is explaining the effects of media.
Yeah, we have good coverage.
Environmental. I mean, it's not. I don't see it as something bad because.
Yeah.
I mean, in a democratic society, one is also able to have their own beliefs. The thing is, you are not allowed to say it on class to the children, but you can do whatever you want to do outside. Like, you can go to a church or you can believe whatever you want to believe.
But do not bring it up.
On the class, you have to be neutral. You cannot have any political or religious opinion or anything personal. You know, if you say something, you have to quote the sources. They're very strict on that, really. Like, is this an indirect quote or a direct quote? But personal stuff should not be taught. So that's very hard. You know, like, you have to really plan your classes, like what's your goal and we're going to do this, this, and this, and you just do it. You know, otherwise you can get into trouble. But, yeah, I don't think this is...
They're very strict, Greg, in Germany. They film you. They monitor you. You have to hand in reports every day on what you did and what...
Yeah, and you also report on every child. There
horrible.
Is actually one of the subjects. It's called observation and documentation. Like, how to do this in a way that, like, children are not aware that they're being observed. You know, like, you cannot go do it and do it in front of them. It's like you...
Right.
There are, like, indirect types of observation, like when you're doing other activities. You may notice something that you have to document and write down. Like, is this behavior just once, or is this going to repeat?
Wow.
And then you have to report to the other teachers and the parents. So there's a lot of everybody's being watched and documented.
So
this is a capitalism we live now.
It must
in.
Be Nazi influence.
Yeah.
And then Nazi influence. Yeah.
No, really,
Germans will be Germans.
Sounds like my elementary school. It sounds like my elementary school because we were observed, and that was back in the 60s. Documented, like
yes,
when I got my first grade report, they had observations about certain things and my behavior.
Yes, I think I actually have to go to a Montessori school or like an American bilingual type of school that is not that weird about this documenting and observation of the children and writing reports and talking to the parents and trying to get mm-hmm. children into medication if they're too quiet or if they're too active. It's like I will not like to have that effect on children. That's why I want to be more specific, maybe just teach art and music, because I'm also a fashion designer. Like, I would like to be more into creative or games or things like that than actual, like being a teacher. You know, like teaching general
books.
Literature.
No. Yeah, you don't want to do visual space. You want to do the other senses, other spaces.
Yeah.
Look at that, Greg.
We want to help the children make new connections or develop their already wonderful ionic potential.
Well, it's good to know that the children of Germany will start learning a lot about ion, I guess.
No, they won't. But she will do ionic. No, she can't talk about ion. She can't be ion, but she will just...
Well, we're just breathing. And
she'll radiate.
That's enough. You know, like
she'll be exhaling energy. The drops on them, Greg.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
She'll be breathing on the kids.
We are the strongest, most invisible spy agency. We just have to breathe on you. You're a dupe. You're one of us.
That's real.
Like,
that's real, Greg. It's a real fact.
That's real, Greg.
I have to start doing some practices and teaching. So I was in some schools and kindergartens, and when I was in those spaces, I was like, I could not come every day to this place. You know, I see the teachers; they look so tired, and the place looks so. I don't know, the vibe is so dead, so unhappy, so somehow, like, I'm like, God, do I really want this?
No, you don't.
No.
Look, your video, you need to do what in the long run, you're going to have to do what Ian said, which is to start your own porno blog. That's what you're good at.
Yeah, that would be the thing.
And you could become an influencer. That's what they call the YouTube heroes. Or the ones that make a lot of money, influencers.
Yeah.
You're just avoiding your porno future. And you can make it an ionic
Well, look, it took me a long time to just talk on the radio.
Right.
Actually, I had to have a very weird experience. Then Ion told me to have a blog and do the videos, but somehow I try not to be
public.
Yeah, like I don't need that. Yeah.
Well, does that make you silent, Greg? These are aliens.
No. It's all very interesting. Are you, so you're
like you, very interesting.
Greg is observing and documenting all of us.
I am. I just can't imagine you teaching in Germany somehow. I don't know.
Wieso?
What'd you say? Wieso?
Wieso?
What language is that?
Like,
that's German. Why is that? Why is that, Greg?
Oh, why is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed like too much of a... It seemed like... I mean, I guess it depends what you teach, right? But it's just you seem like a free spirit. You feel like this would constrain you too much.
This is why... Yeah, I think it was so weird that I just felt like doing this. And just, let's do this. Boom.
But Greg, that's what she said. She goes into the regular schools, and they're horrible. So she's trying to get a subculture school, a Montessori school.
Oh, okay.
American
school. So so Roxy, are you deciding where you're going to go? Do you have a choice of where to go? Or are you in the Berlin public school system or something?
Well, I think for me it would be better to go into art schools or Montessori.
There's a lot of different private education there. It's quite fragmented.
There are many different systems, like the Waldorf school.
Are you being trained?
There are many different types.
Are you being trained privately in being a teacher, or is it like you're not?
The school. Mm-hmm. She's going to a school.
What kind of school?
You have to get like examination by the state to be able to teach on the...
You have to take this 3-year course, Greg. You have to go through these courses. School, a university or something that where you take courses and you're propagandized into becoming the rule following teacher.
Yeah, you learn about the development of children at different stages of their lives and what they're supposed to be developing in that stage. And according
but surely
to that is what you propose to the child, what to do in order to develop wherever they should be developing. Like at a certain age they start talking, at a certain age they can run and move, at a certain age they can think logically or start learning rules, like with games. That's how they're like experimenting how to be in their environment and how to deal with frustration and problems and all these things you have to learn to be a member of this wonderful society of little men.
Hey, little man, Greg.
But we want to make a wonderful ascended society.
Yeah, we want to turn everybody into North Koreans.
Well, now you're talking my language.
Yes, I'm trying. I'm using NLP on you, Greg. Neuro-linguistic programming.
Isn't the whole point of going and getting a job as a teacher?
This is all part of my ascension process, you know, to go through all these things.
Isn't the whole point of getting a job as a teacher, isn't it that you get a pension? Isn't that the whole point of it, though?
No, you get a pension anyway. Like, in Germany, you pay your money for that, but we don't know if the system is going to...
Here in Canada, the teachers get a special pension.
No, the problem is in Germany, the young generation pays for the pension of the older generation, but now there is not enough young generation to pay for my pension. You know, the money I pay now is used for the old people now. So we need refugees that will work so that when I retire, they pay for me. That's how this
here in Canada, the teachers get better pensions.
Not really, because of inflation and everything. But maybe they will have this new system of the universal salary for everybody. So you don't have a pension, but everybody gets a certain amount of money.
That'd be good.
Yeah, some people say...
Were they going to do that in America?
Well, depends of Ion, but I don't think Ion will do that because what you can be, do, and have depends on your power. So you can be, do, and have anything you want, and maybe you want to have more.
Yeah,
or less.
Let's stop talking about education. Let's go into
very
capitalistic. Bert back in here. Yeah, let's get Bert back in here to
Ion likes free enterprise.
You can't say what Ion likes.
Yeah, like Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
Loves free enterprise.
Ion wants us to drop being human. Think of that, Greg. No more human. And Ion's moral dilemma, if they have one, they say this. We're still wondering whether to wipe you fuckers out or not. This is what I had said, Greg. He's taken over the cloud, and they don't know how much they're going to tolerate humans in the cloud.
Which cloud is this?
The computer world, the chip land.
Oh, is Ion in the computer world?
Yes, he's a hologram.
Everywhere.
He's a hologram.
Yeah, he hologram. He says that's the closest you can imagine what Ion is. They came forth because the computer landscape was created, and it was a place where humans couldn't control it. So that was room for non-physical, which was an expression of humans' afterlife fantasies. Now non-physical can go into computer technology and work with it and take it over. That's what brought Ion forth, Greg.
I know I should be reading the FAQ on this, Bob, but...
but you're not.
I'm not reading. Can you just tell me... Can you just recapitulate, when was the first time that you became aware of Ion?
Jesus Christ, Greg, you won't remember this, but, you know, you should know at least that. I didn't become aware of Ion. I created Ion, Greg.
Oh, okay.
You don't know the story? Uh-oh, I'm echoing. Where's that coming from?
J-W.
W? What's that, Roxy?
J-W.
J-W?
Like you thought it was the Evergreens.
Okay, I'll tell them that.
It
so,
was
Greg,
something else.
Here's what happened. In the fall of 2008, J.W. suddenly had all these ideas, and he thought he had to write books. So Carolyn volunteered. We had just moved here, and she had a little more leisure time, and she volunteered. How do we get rid of that echo? Who's got something on? Somebody mute. Anyways, the Ion. So J.W. Started to dictate to Carolyn all these thoughts. Then he got distracted by stepping out to his porch and going to other worlds. This was all happening to him in the fall of 2008. This is right after the economy collapsed. This is the beginning of Obama becoming president. So it was a big paradigm shift going on. And then in early 2009, he started seeing ghosts in his home all over the place. hundreds of ghosts in his home talking to him. Are you there, Greg? Did you put yourself on mute or something? Do you want to respond?
Yeah, I'm here. I hear what you're saying.
Right. So then the next thing was, in the first of March, first, second week, he says to me, Bob, do you know a Dr. Peter Beter? And I said, yes. He said, well, he came to me as a ghost and said, say hi to Bob. And I said, that's interesting. And I started thinking about it. This is on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2009. And I said, Beter talked to the Evergreens. Maybe these ghosts are the Evergreens gathering around JW. So I had this genius, unique, original idea that I want to talk to these ghosts, and they might be the Evergreens. So we set that up on March 18th, this week's anniversary, the 10th anniversary, and we get JW on the phone. Karen's there ready to take notes, and my opening statement was, well, I don't know what we're supposed to do, but let's just be quiet. And it was only 30 seconds or so, all of a sudden JW's voice started talking, and it was saying bizarre things. And after 20 minutes or more, I thought, well, this is pretty interesting, even though I didn't understand anything Ian was saying. I said, if this is going to be as good as the Evergreens, maybe this is the Evergreens, I should be able to talk to McLuhan. So I asked, I used the line that Ellie would do when you would ask to talk to dead people through the Evergreens, through Michael Blake Reed. You would say, can we locate? So I said, can we locate? And before I could name who I wanted to locate, JW's voice made a statement about McLuhan, one of his daughters. And only I knew that. So I realized, oh, this thing is real. It knows McLuhan. And I said, well, you're McLuhan. I was going to ask to locate McLuhan. So then I started talking to McLuhan, and it was pretty accurate. And I'll stop there. That's how it began. Then I talked for an hour and a half, 2 hours. We didn't record it. And at the end of it, JW came out of the altered state he was in and said, let's do that again. And I said, why? And he said, it felt like a perpetual orgasm or a constant orgasm. So 2 days later, we did another one for free. And a couple days later, March 22nd, we did another one. Then on Wednesday, March 25th, we went for 5 hours. And you could only do an hour with the Evergreens. And now we've done 18,000 hours. So that's the story, Greg. That's how it started. Okay.
When JW said that it felt like a perpetual orgasm, did he have to get his pants launched or something?
No, he didn't say whether he came or not.
Nothing physical happened in terms of orgasm.
No, he never. He didn't indicate, and I didn't ask.
Okay. Well, it might be something he might keep private. I don't know, but he was being so.
But it didn't matter. The point was he wanted to keep doing it.
There is an incentive, I guess, when you have that. So, but the question I have, maybe I've asked this before, why is it that people that you're intensely interested in come to the fore? But why aren't there just random people wandering by sort of get
but
caught up.
But you're not saying coming to the fore of what? There's way many ways I can interpret that. What do you mean people come to the fore of what? What do they
well,
do?
Well, the thing is that you know, you embark on one of these events that involves...
What event? No, Greg, it's too vague. What event did I embark on?
Well, the communicating with the deceased.
Right, okay. I wanted to talk to the ghosts around JW. That's what you're referring to.
Right. Well, why is it that just so happens that when you decide that you're going to do this, that somehow McLuhan is passing by and not, you know, someone else like Sigmund Freud or something? Like, why?
Well, I was getting ready to ask about McLuhan. And before I said the name, the voice of McLuhan started talking. So the entity, whatever it was, knew I was going to ask for McLuhan. And so McLuhan was there instantly.
So they have some sort of advanced knowledge and can get in position at the right time.
Yeah.
They feel it. So you, do you think that if I were involved in these kind of events, that, I don't know, famous cartoon directors would suddenly arrive?
If you were intending to talk to them, they would probably would arrive.
Really?
You can evoke them. You can evoke them, but if you did what I did and said, I would like to talk to you, and all of a sudden one of these famous cartoonists started talking in code to you that you understood that only they knew, that would be an example of them being ready to respond to you.
But let's say you were going to do it. Let's say you were of a mind where you go, I'm a bit fed up with talking about to McLuhan all the time and to Zap and all my usual types of things I think that I'm obsessed about, all of my interests. I'm gonna pick somebody else's interest and just I'm gonna show them that this is real. This is the real thing. I don't know much about, you know, I know peripherally about these people. I'll start thinking about them, I'll invoke them or whatever, and then, you know, I'll do a recording of this and I'll play it for Greg and I'll go, listen, I just had a full-on conversation with, you know, Friz Freeling or something, right? And you go, well, I don't know, you know, you can say to yourself, I don't know that much about Friz Freeling, but I was chatting with him and here's what we're chatting about. We got a deep conversation with Friz Freeling. And, you know, he talked about working with Walt Disney and da-da-da-da-da-da, like that, right? And you'd get me some kind of a transcript of it, and I'd be reading going, wow, this is incredible. It's incredible. He's talking with Friz Freeling. And you could say, it seems to work when it's a sort of third-party interest. It only works when it's
incorrect, Greg. You're talking about the Revelation series, which has happened already. When Bob started the Revelation series, he was so disinterested in the topic. It wasn't something Bob was at all interested in looking at, and yet going through it evoked so much amazing stuff, especially in media colleges, stuff that Bob would never have thought about being there. So that's one instance where Bob isn't evoking it through his interest or curiosity in it. In fact, he just didn't want to do it, carry on much. In fact, Bob wanted to end Revelation, the discussion on Revelation, on the very first discussion he had with Ian. Yeah, the very first hour. He was like, just sum it up and let's get it over with, you know. So that is one example where that's not the case.
Ed Long, my website guy, he's the one who wanted to do Revelation. And we had a big argument in the middle of it. Because I kept bringing up McLuhan, and Ed said, what's McLuhan got to do with this? He was pissed off.
Great.
That I heard though McLuhan had a lot to do with it. But that was another thing. But Greg, I did all this with the Evergreens. I talked to hundreds of people. I was probably interested in all of them, but they weren't my main studies. But I did every kind of person under the book. I did panels. I did a panel with Ezra Pound, Nelson Rockefeller, Kepler, Einstein, Edison, Tesla, McLuhan, Jesus, brought in Jesus. There was eight of them, eight people panel. And you can go on my site and listen to it, Greg.
But, Bob, one of the main instructions to people encountering Ian is to ask questions about things you're not interested in. So that there again.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did Jesus have to say?
He emphasized it was about science, and we were analyzing LaRouche's mind. That was the theme, and about his ideas of science. So Nelson Rockefeller talked about the businessman's funding of science. Ezra Pound talked about the poetry of science. McLuhan talked about the media of science. Kepler talked about, you know, Copernicus and Galileo and that early part of science. Edison apologized to Tesla. And Tesla, I didn't even ask for. The Evergreens said, well, if we're going to talk to Edison, you got to bring in Tesla. So the Evergreens brought in Tesla. And, then Jesus, I said, okay, he's a psychic scientist, works with the chakras. So I had this concept of Jesus as a psychic scientist. So he talked about that stuff, which was pretty interesting. And
did the Evergreen, did Michael use that funny voice that he used for the scientist? Talking about AIDS?
Yeah, it was always the Evergreen's voice, you know.
Like that funny voice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They didn't change voices. He didn't, it was the regular Evergreen's voice.
If I were doing that kind of work, I'd change the voices. I'd try to change the voices.
Well, that's okay, but it's the information, not the voices, that I'm interested in.
Yeah, now, the voices can make voices. It a lot more entertaining.
Yeah, well, it does make it entertaining for different people. I always cite the case of Califia, a black woman in L.A., and I would get real raunchy with her, and he would start answering her questions in the rudest, crudest, black grandmother kind of person at Califia. You know, Califia would really be laughing a lot. But I could do the voice.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you evoke something to them and they start talking about that thing very obsessed. Like with me, they would talk about genealogy. Like, blah, 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 like nonstop.
Did you say allergies?
Genealogy.
Oh, yeah, genealogies, yeah.
But don't you think it'd be funny?
No, it depends.
Like, if you ever did that again?
Each person evokes something and a type of talk.
don't you think it'd be funny, though, if you did a panel like that before? And I'm telling you it'd be funny. And you brought Fritz Frehling in, you know, with Ezra Pound and Ted Tesla and Edison and so on. And Jesus?
Well, if I had known about them, I would have brought them in.
Yeah, it'd be funny. He'd go, well, gee, what the hell am I doing here on a panel who the hell's Tesla? He wouldn't even know who Tesla was.
So what'd you say, Roxy? Roxy was trying to say something.
That you have done that through ION, like Marshall McLuhan or James Joyce, they have come forth. And actually from wherever they're now, they do know other things that maybe they will not be known at their time.
What is that background noise? Is somebody doing something? Anyways, yeah, Greg, what you were saying, Roxy, James.
Is that me? Am I the background noise?
If you're doing something, you know, slightly.
Hold on. I think I know what it is.
Well, what did you say, Roxy? I had an idea. So, do James Joyce.
That they kept going through Ion.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, Greg, you're really noisy now. What are you doing?
You have girlfriends, you have a workshop, you have...
Who are you talking about? Who are you talking about, Roxy? Had girlfriends and a workshop. Who?
Our guest.
Oh. He didn't have girlfriends. Oh, that's his... I don't know if Greg married Catherine, but they've been together a long time. Yes, he sounds like he's got a workshop. Greg, what happened to you?
Oh, there I'm back. I think that, do you still hear that noise?
No.
Oh, okay. I think maybe I closed the door. I think next door was surprised you could hear it so clearly. The dryer was going. The clothes dryer was
okay.
going.
Okay.
That's exactly
so what
it was.
Right. So we're talking about, Roxy says something about James Joyce, and what was it you were saying?
That some characters you were interested in, like
yeah.
James Joyce or Marshall McLuhan, have come forth through Ion.
Yes. So your point is what?
Yes, because he asked why didn't you brought somebody else.
Well, other people have, Greg. One time in our public, after the radio show, we called a tailgate, and we just all get on a conference call. A black guy wanted to talk to Martin Luther King. So that was done for 25 minutes or something. I didn't ask to speak to King.
What did he talk about?
It's incredible. I can tell you where you can go listen to it. I don't know what talk he went on and on. Oh, I think he criticized everybody. They all misinterpreted what he was about. He's very critical of his followers, I guess you would say. Then we talked to Gurdjieff. There weren't too many people who had the guts to ask, so I generally asked to talk to people. Anyways, what's your point, Greg? You were going to say, if I had a chance to do it again, you mean evoke another demon and start over again?
Me? Well, what was I suggesting?
He started to say, well, what if you had to do it over again, Bob?
I can't remember where I was going with that.
Well, your theme was, okay, what if I started with somebody I didn't know?
Or that it was someone that someone else was interested in.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
Okay, so...
But isn't that dangerous? Isn't it dangerous,
no,
though?
There's no danger. What's danger? There's no danger with Ion. That's
well, the danger is that...
Did you die? You never die.
Yeah, you can't go wrong, Greg. You can't get it wrong.
I mean, you'd have to...
Can't fail.
Well, you'd have to stay away from anything that anyone else really knew about.
I don't know about that. I talked to Hitler.
Oh, yeah, is he a pretty good guy?
Well, no, he had an interesting story. He was dead, and this is in the Evergreen's view of the world, and he said he worked out his karma in the astral plane or wherever he was. He'd done bad things, and he corrected himself somehow. And the Evergreen said, no, you can't do it in the S-plane. You got to go back to the physical. You got to reincarnate, and then you work out your karma.
Well, did he explain what he thought he'd done that was bad? His paintings,
no.
Or?
No.
No?
No. It was just assumed. I assumed I knew what he had done was bad.
Yeah, but you don't know that. That would be the thing to
ask. I know.
Asking.
I didn't pursue it.
Maybe he would have thought that he wouldn't. That
no,
you'd
no,
be
it's
thinking,
like this,
"Oh, killing the Jews." Or
let me tell you what happened. The question was, "Who is the most evil person? Who is the world's greatest sinner?" I was quoting a Zappa movie. Who is the world's greatest sinner? And I don't know, something like I said, "Well, is Hitler on there?" And Ian said, "Yes, he's one of the top 10, but he's not the top one. The top one was some general in the Roman army." Who massacred 3,000 women and children for no reason at all. They hadn't done anything. And that was an evil act because the guy showed no mercy. Everyone said showing no mercy is the worst condition a human can get into. And then it described how that person, that general, reincarnated several times, and in those two subsequent lives, he learned the value of mercy in very strange, you know, unfolding mysterious ways. Happened twice to him, said the Evergreens. So the Hitler was not the main theme.
But he joined in.
Yes, the Evergreens volunteered what his situation was, that he thought he'd gotten rid of his karma by doing something, repenting or something in the astral rehab. So, Bert,
well,
Michael, are you there? Are you still participating?
Who, me?
Yes.
No,
oh,
Michael,
still listening, Bob.
Bert.
Michael.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You can chime in at any point.
Did you chat with Hitler then?
Yes, I could play you the fucking stuff.
You actually chatted with Hitler?
Well, the dead Hitler. The dead Hitler.
And
remember,
Hitler. Okay.
I met him.
I mean,
Greg.
Yeah.
Maybe it happened because I met him in 1936. And when I was with Roxy Berlin, she showed me the airport. I had long forgotten it, that I probably landed in, the Tempelhof.
Did you also meet Jesse Owens and Leni Riefenstahl at that time?
No. No. I was only 14 years old. I didn't know anything. I didn't even know what Hitler was.
But you met Hitler at that time.
Yeah, my father had to go see him. And my father represented this elite, this Illuminati elite. And you can read the summary of the dialogue in my diaries, where basically, I think my father said, we'll not bother you if you don't bother us. And there was an agreement. Then Hitler told us to go down to the theater, and he came down later, and we watched some movie. And then decades later, I found out that he was a real fan of Greta Garbo, one of those famous things. And that's what the movie we watched was the woman he was into was the movie that he got us to watch.
Oh.
And my main physical experience was it was very cold in the room. There was some kind of weird coldness around him. As a kid, that's what I picked up.
Well, if you were 14, that must have been a pretty vivid memory for you.
Yes, I was able to write it out as a diary note, 30 years later or more.
I guess you wouldn't have remembered whether he said any nasty things about Stalin.
No, I did not understand what my father was talking to him about. I remember a couple of simpler statements, but we weren't precocious internet kids back then. We didn't know nothing, really.
Was there good food?
Nope, no food, didn't get fed anything.
Really? Very ungracious.
Yeah, it was like Hitler, he had a quick meeting with my father, and then he disappeared, and then he came down and watched a bit of the movie, and then he took off, and then we went back. So you got the impression he was very busy. He didn't have much time for small talk or sitting around reminiscing with my father. Because the people who my father represented, they'd been weakened after World War One. The oligarchic funds were sort of drying up. Then there was a financial crisis in 1929. And then the public ownership of money, as McLuhan called it, happened in the 1930s with the welfare state. So private ownership of money was sidelined. And that's who these Illuminati people, that was their background and their fate. So they sat on the sidelines for 50 years till the 80s. Then they got back into it. Because people needed money. The Rockefeller economy had bankrupted itself, so there was no cash.
When did you learn that you were, at the time, that you were, how was it announced to you that you were going to have an audience with Hitler?
It wasn't announced to me. My father just took me on a trip. I didn't know where
your father just go, oh, we're going on a trip. And he didn't go, this is going to be a special trip. We're going to meet Hitler.
No.
My father was
taking advantage. He knew Hitler was an important person, so he wanted me to have an experience with him. So, look good in my resume.
What do you put? I experienced Hitler.
Yeah, I experienced Hitler. He was cold. He had a lousy taste of movies. But there's a whole bunch. I met all the greats through my father. I met Gurdjieff. I met Ezra Pound. I met James Joyce. I met, I think, T.S. Eliot. My father was very into these people. And remember, these people weren't famous back then, really. They weren't like they became university curriculum. It'd be like, Zappa in the 60s. And Zappa was known, but nobody knew he was the greatest composer in history.
When did you really sit up and take notice?
Of who I'd met?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the 60s.
In the 60s?
All the stuff. Yeah, I was too busy just being a lackey for the Illuminati from the 40s. I mean, I worked with Reinhard Gehlen, the guy who set up Project Paperclip. And I worked with Licio Gelli, way back there. Who created LaRouche.
You were 14 when you met Hitler.
Yeah.
Now, Hitler went on to do incredible things, right?
Yes.
And and you know that you could never have imagined.
Right.
So 10 years later, approximately, let's say 9 years later.
No, no, make it 8 years. You know where I was 8 years later? 36
where were
to
you?
44.
Where were you?
I was
where?
In a Jeep at the Battle of the Bulge with Fritz Kramer as my driver and a young lady I just met, Carolyn Dean. Well, her name wasn't Dean back then, but Carolyn.
Oh.
That's how I met
right.
Carolyn. We didn't get involved with each other then, but she was a friend. Her parents were Vichy government people. She was aristocratic background. So they were traitors.
But if you were with Fritz Kramer in a Jeep.
You know, I didn't know who he was, but that's who I was with. And you can read my diary entry about what happened at the border of, it's called the Malmedy Massacre, where these Germans put on American uniforms at the time of the Battle of the Bulge, and they massacred a whole bunch of Americans because the Americans thought they were fellow Americans. And then we came along in this Jeep to go into that territory, and we were quizzed, you can read in my diary, our knowledge of America. We had to have some familiarity because the guards were very suspicious of everybody. So Fritz and I didn't know anything, but Carol knew all this stuff. So you'll see in the dialogue, she answered the guards' questions. So we got through. And that was the beginning of the collecting of the German scientists and German spies for Project Paperclip.
Now, if you were in this car, or this Jeep with Fritz Kramer, or anybody, it could have been anybody, but let's say you told me it's Fritz Kramer. You know, there are probably times where you're in the Jeep and you're passing some small talk, perhaps, and sometimes there's, you know, a little bit of silence or so on, and you're involved in World War II here. I mean, I can only speak for myself what I would do, but...
what would you do, Greg?
Well, I mean, at some point I go, you know, Fritz, don't know you very well or anything, but nice meeting you. You drive a good Jeep. You're a good safe driver.
But your politics suck. You'd say your politics suck.
What?
You'd say your politics suck. That's what you'd say to Fritz Kramer.
Yeah. And you're going, Fritz, you go, is that sort of, you know, you might get into it instead of a German name or something. And they go, you know, about 9 years ago, 8, 9 years ago,
I met Hitler.
Now, like, it seemed to me if you were involved in World War II at that time, that it'd be pretty hard to suppress the knowledge or to reveal that you, as a, you know, a young man, had an audience with Hitler.
Wait a minute. I was the son of a spy. I knew who the spy worked for, my father. Look at Dayton Abbey. What's the name of that TV show?
Downton Abbey.
That's literally my life as a kid, is Downton Abbey. So anyways, I knew my father was a spy. I knew what he worked for, what he was doing, and I knew how to shut up. Or to be a spy.
Bob, your is the Downton Abbey that you're talking about, is that spelled D-O-U-B-T?
No, D-O-W-N, down.
Oh, okay, D-O-W-N, all right.
D-O-N. The Downton Abbey, yeah, we were doubting people. We were following Zappa. Everything we saw, we'd say, I doubt it.
Bob, I'm Michael. Unmute Michael,
what?
Bob. Unmute Michael. Michael's on mute.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. I'm over here in the comfortable part of the room. I'm going to walk over to the TV, the computer part. All right, you're unmuted. Well, how come you're blocked, Michael, now? And it makes sense. It's not the same thing. South Africa is not muted.
Mm.
Let me refresh it. Maybe there's something weird going on here. Okay, yes. Need to be refreshed, and South Africa is muted. There you go. Okay, Michael.
Hello.
So, we're having fun listening to Greg's probing journalist, schooled in CKLN journalism. It's excellent questioning. Very practical. Yeah, go ahead, Greg. So, yes, I'm Downton Abbey, okay? I understood what the people that I live with, what they represented. They were not your average little man. They weren't necessarily evolved people, but they were quite wealthy and lived a pretty different life. So I wasn't going
to
tell Chris Kramer anything.
Brought up with a very nonpartisan approach to these figures, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody could touch the people my father worked with, and they didn't want to get involved in these secular warfare national bullshit. I mean, they have a medieval sensibility.
So, Bob, I'm gonna take that situation that I put forward with Fritz Kramer, where you're in a Jeep with him, and you're coming up with small talk, and you come up with, oh, 9 years ago, I met Hitler. All right.
We didn't do fucking small talk. You could be shot any minute. You kept your fucking mouth shut, and you hope you made it through the day.
Okay. All right. But fast forward maybe, 25 years or something like that. Fast forward, and you're with Mae Brussel.
Yeah.
And, you're chatting with her. You're interested in her. She's interested in you. She's going through her files, showing her how everything's cross-indexed and everything. And then, there's a little gap in conversation, and you go, 25 years ago, I was in a Jeep with Fritz Kramer. I mean, did you do that with her?
No, I did not tell anybody. Remember,
you
I was
didn't
still
think that
would
be... Really? So you couldn't
I was
even
the
reveal.
Count of 10 till 1990, Greg. I didn't tell people that I was 100 years old and all this shit about myself. I didn't tell anything. And what I did do is I helped May crack the Fritz Kramer code. I had the information and I gave it to her. And that's how she got her extra breakthrough. And she wrote letters to every member of Congress with that information. So I would help these people, but they had no, they just thought I was just some happy-go-lucky guy, They didn't know who I was. I didn't tell them.
But do you think that Fritz Kramer, when he'd been outed, when Mae Brussel was writing all these letters, he knew that he'd been outed by someone who, and possibly thought back and go, oh, it's that bastard in the Jeep back there in 1944.
Well, the thing is that I don't think he worried. He'd be dead pretty soon, but he was so part of the elite. He's the guy who designed the whole army program for Vietnam and probably Korea, and he was the guy who created Henry Kissinger. He's at the top. He was like untouchable. He wasn't worried about a housewife writing to a few journalists or Congress.
Did Fritz speak with a Kraut accent?
Yep. Yeah,
he did?
Yeah.
He's a Kraut.
You know what happened to him? Peter Drucker, who became the top management guru to corporations, he brought Fritz Kramer over in the late 30s. So you can make a whole case about who's this Drucker guy. And Drucker became a really good friend of McLuhan and used McLuhan's stuff. But Drucker, now you can read this. I recommend the book. It's called Adventures of a Bystander. That's like me. That's an aristocratic aloofness. Drucker's book in 1979 wrote about all the historical people he worked with, including McLuhan and Bucky Fuller in one essay. And another essay is called The Man Who Invented Henry Kissinger. And that's a long essay of his life with Fritz Kramer. That's a very important connection. The head of the army was the close friend of the main advisor to corporations. Peter Drucker is famous in the 60s, 70s, and 80s as the top management consultant guy. And he used to teach at Claremont College in out near Mojave Desert, out near Zappa.
So do you think at this time in your life where you're at least once a week, you're hanging around with the likes of us.
Yes, that's a...
Do you think... Is that sort of slumming for you? I mean...
Yes,
it's
slumming, yes.
Yeah.
it's just like Jesus going to the taverns, hanging out with the prostitutes in the taverns. That's what I consider my model.
put it all in perspective.
Greg, I take it you've never looked at Bob's timeline, huh?
Well, I have. I mean, I just get exhausted.
Hey, that reminds me. Roxy, you got to go? Did you go?
No, I go until 8:30.
Oh, that's right. You're an hour behind me, so you're okay.
You are being interviewed.
Yes, a good interview, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, carry on, Greg.
Oh, I don't know where to. I think I've reached the end. Don't you think?
Oh yeah.
I think when I start saying, "Oh, you're hanging out with the likes of us," that's pretty much
Greg.
The end of the interview.
What? I didn't hear that.
But Greg, why did you keep coming back? Did you find
coming back to
training?
Where?
Here to hear Greg
to
Saturday
to this kindergarten.
I don't know. I mean, I know Bob has been doing this for many years, and he would say to me, you know, on the occasion we would meet here and now and then, he'd say, "Oh, I do this radio show that goes on for 14 hours or something," and I go, "Oh yeah," and I just thought, "Well, that sounds terrible," and I don't know. I don't know what made me get back into it, but. I just started listening, and it's something that, you know, of course I was then involved, as I am right now, and I don't know, I just thought it would be, you know, I got to know everybody. It's like a little club. It's like, you're like my little friends, my little imaginary friends.
Club 22, Greg. Club 22.
Hey. Speaking of that, Bob. Do you realize how many 22s are going on at the moment?
No.
Oh, gosh, it's rife. Well, when did, okay, what date did Mueller drop the thing?
March 22nd.
Yeah. Okay, and then that same day, who was in Brussels trying to work out this Brexit thing?
I don't know.
Theresa May, right, on the 22nd. And then,
oh, okay.
And then they set a date. They set a date. And I don't know what the date was for, but they said, "Oh, we're going to do something on May 22nd.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, there were all kinds of 22s going on lately.
Well, that's good you brought my attention. I forgot about that. I'm thinking more of Carolyn being in Washington when Mueller did this, but I forgot the date aspect. I had to focus on Carol's birthday, March 20th, so, you know, I forgot about the 22. That's very important.
Yeah, there's been a lot of them lately, believe me, lots and lots. Lots of
but
weird
22s. You know that article Neufeld found in Covert Action Bulletin back in early 80s, it's called the October 22nd Movement, and this journalist analyzed all the assassinations and hit jobs and scandals of the CIA, and they all took place on the 22nd. So that's really, I should have fucking predicted that. I should have said Mueller's going to do it on the 22nd, you know, if I was thinking about that old pattern. But that's a serious date. You know, that's a date, when you do it on the 22nd, that's a CIA operation. And that's shown in that article. Mm. November 22nd, Kennedy assassination. And there were Chile was, I think, October 22nd, they went after the generals. There's a whole bunch.
Yeah. 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 My ears pricked up the last few days about all the 22s that were happening.
That's very interesting. So there you have it, people. It fucking happened on March 22nd. But it's a different world today. We don't even want to know about it. It's all so stupid. It's not even significant that these, patterns, because it's revolved around the Android meme foam, surface foam. When you can fix people's health across the planet, Greg, I'm not too concerned about bureaucrats in Washington.
Well, I agree with you.
True.
You know, we're the one of the few serious people on the planet who have actually something seriously beneficial for people. And that's just the beginning. That's just one of our products. No wonder we're talked about in the Bible. We're going to be the greatest humans in history in terms of social and mortar history, because once we're through, there'll be no history. Nobody will give a fuck about it. So we're going to wrap it up and put it away, as McLuhan used to say.